everyone. I'm Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam people. So it's Access Day here at CITR, and we're super excited because we are bringing you all content about accessibility in performance. That is this year's theme. And for All Access Pass, we have two very special episodes. That's right, everyone. I'm doing two episodes today. And we are focusing, All Access Pass is focusing specifically on performance with UBC students. So we have some very special guests on the episode at 2 p.m., which is now, and the episode at 6 p.m., which will be airing later. And we've got some guests from UBC Music, UBC Players, UBC Musical Theater. But right now, I've got two guests in studio live with me. I have Katarina. Hi, Katarina.
Hello.
And Miles.
Hello.
Hi, Miles. So, Nicole, she, her pronouns.
Miles, they, them pronouns.
Mm-hmm. Katarina, she, her pronouns.
Wonderful. Yeah, so I'm super excited to have both of you in. So you're both UBC students.
Indeed.
Yes, indeed we are.
And Miles, you are in the UBC BFA program.
I am indeed.
Bachelor of Fine Arts in Acting.
Very fun, yeah. Very busy. And I'm also work with the Players Club.
Yeah.
For this year and the last year.
And Katarina, you are doing a Bachelor of Arts,
mm-hmm.
and you are studying GRSJ with a minor in film.
That is correct.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
It is a fun one. It's, yeah, it's a
very
big,
cool.
big focus yeah. on media and film and arts and how that shapes social justice is kind of my spiel. If that
yeah,
makes
that's
sense.
A good one. A lot of media is very relevant. I don't know if you watch Succession. I don't. I can't stand the theme song. That's like, everyone's like, that's the best part. I'm like, I can't deal with
it. I'm concerned
that
if the best part of the show is the theme song.
But yeah, no, that's quite
but
unfortunate.
But there's like this one scene where a media outlet, they're all in a room and they're like, it's a media outlet, so they do all the news and they're like, we're deciding who is going to be the next president right now. And
oh, wow.
Like, I think about that all the time with media.
That's
no,
you now.
No
yeah, yeah.
You're
no,
deciding who
yeah.
the next president
yeah.
is.
Yes.
It's all you.
On my local community radio show. But Katarina, you're part of UBC Musical Theater.
I am, yes. It's my second year. Yeah, I just finished my second year there, and it's super awesome and cool. We just did Into the Woods, and I got to play Little Red Riding Hood, which
oh
was
gosh.
Like a...
That's such a fun one.
It was.
That's
it was
a
like a total
one.
Dream role, so I was very thrilled with that one.
Into the Woods
yes.
is a hard show.
It is a hard show. It was definitely... We had Sondheim, you know, shaking in his grave over there, but, you know, it was awesome, and everyone there was so awesome to work with, and it's such a, like... warm and fuzzy environment, which is really cool in the arts. I think that's definitely
huge.
Something special. Miles, I'm sure you know.
Always that common. But
and
most,
really
like,
not always that common.
You know what? You can find the good people.
You but. Can find the good people, but like everyone there is a good person. And
I've heard
so,
great things. I've worked a little bit with the people in musical theater, and they're all great.
Yeah, they yeah. are.
I just think it's so interesting because High School Musical Theater, I don't know if either of you did High School Musical Theater. I assume mm-hmm. to some extent. No?
No.
Yeah.
Miles, you did?
I did a lot of high school theater, a little bit of musical theater, but it was okay. a class and it was not any cool musicals. We couldn't afford the rights.
But yeah, High so School true. Musical Theater is like life or death.
Yeah.
Which is, I think everyone kind of knows that stereotype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like it really is like life or death. And I'm like, okay, everyone, we're all just... It's we're fine. Everyone's
no,
fine.
No, that's
high
just like the theater culture in general. It's like
yeah.
like theater culture. Like if you know what that means, you really know what that means. And
yeah.
so MTT is a cool place because it's.
I've heard it's a lot more like people focused.
It's more people focused, and it's
like
we all love theater, but we all.
Also
you know,
fun.
It's supportive and it's not like cutthroat as yeah. I've been in some other environments where
yeah,
it's like
High School Musical Theater for I mean I was crew but like
oh,
seeing all of that
crew
behind the scenes.
A lot of drama.
Yeah, I
a
remember
lot of,
this like I,
ironically.
When I was in grade 12 this like 10th grade girl in costumes came up to me and was like, oh, I know you. And I was like, oh,
that's
like,
alarming.
Hi. And she I was like, oh, have you like met me in crew before? And she was like, yeah, when all of us were at the top of the auditorium looking down at all the performers, you were standing up there. And I did finance and budgeting, so I didn't really I was not that involved. I
yeah,
did
yeah.
publicity too, but I mostly just did my stuff on my own and then sent it out, and that was it for me. I couldn't hang around there too long for
oh, wow.
my sake.
Mm-hmm.
But this girl, she was like, yeah, at the top of the theater when all the crew met, we were looking down the stage. Your arms were crossed, and you just said, I hate everyone here, and laughed.
Wow.
And I was like, I don't remember that, but that seems on brand.
Clearly
yeah.
it stuck
yeah.
with that person.
Yeah, so apparently that was my legacy with high school theater. But
cute.
To be fair, it drives you to places like that.
Yes.
So Miles, you do acting.
I do.
Yeah.
I did a lot of, I did some directing in high school, but I've been focusing mostly on acting. Worked with the Players Club this year and last year. I just did my second year of the BFA, which was very fun, very intense work, but also very validating.
Yes.
But yeah, I think Players Club is probably one of the things that's most important to me. I think accessibility theater is like my big shtick. Having theater that anyone can be a part of, like it doesn't have to be, you don't have to have money in theater to make good theater.
Yeah.
You just have to have, you just have to heart. You just want to, if you want to do it, you can. And I think that's the biggest thing, like giving people who haven't done theater before a chance to step into it and find that community is huge for me. And Players Club really does that well.
Yeah, I could tell you right now, my school had a $10,000 budget and we were not that great.
Oh, wow.
Katarina, and your craft is kind of, so you do musical theater, so singing, dancing, acting.
Yeah, I do musical theater. I just kind of fell in there. I mean, I love theater, but I fell in there because throughout high school, like I didn't start musical theater. My first show was actually last year, which was a Chorus Line with MTT.
That's also a really good one.
Yeah, it was
that
so
was
cool.
A great show.
Yeah,
really good.
I played Sheila, which is like kind of opposite of Little Red Riding Hood. She's a little bit of a, yeah. Anyways, but throughout like high school, I did more singing and acting focus. And then throughout like childhood, I did competitive dance for 8 years. And so I kind of mixed them all together, which I always wanted to do like musicals, but I kind of didn't really have the opportunity until, well, actually when I had my hips replaced, I became a lot more like mobile and everything. And so that's when I kind of like jumped into musical theater. But I also really love film acting. I'd say that's kind of a little bit where my heart is. Mm-hmm. But like musical theater is so fun and I love it so much. So yeah.
Musical theater is like triathlon, but
it is triathlon.
Triathlon is like you can really just get away with being just good at running and knowing how to swim. Mm-hmm. And anyone can ride a bike, but musical theater, The people that are good at it make it look seamless.
It is. Yeah. It is so true.
That is the hardest part.
Yeah.
You're not like, oh, that, you know, you could tell they don't have a dance background. Or you can tell that they took singing lessons approximately 10 weeks before.
Yeah. Yes. No, that's 100%
true.
Yeah.
But the best musical theater people, you're just like in awe of how like naturally it comes to them.
Yeah.
So this next question, answer to as much detail as you feel comfortable sharing, but what access needs do you have? And we can start with Miles.
Yeah, my big access need is I had a fall a couple years ago, and I gave myself a pretty severe whiplash that led into chronic whiplash and whiplash-associated disorder. So pretty bad chronic pain through the last almost 3 years now.
Yeah.
But that definitely changed the way that I have to act as an artist. Like it changed the way that I can do things, specifically because I want to do a lot more things than I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, anyone who knows me knows that I have a pretty horrible habit of burning myself out pretty quick. And
so for real.
Even before my accident, I had that habit. So having to unlearn that plus being disabled has been a trip.
Yeah, it's a hard one, especially in university where I feel like the whole point of university is they throw so much at you, but the whole point is you can't do all of it.
Yeah.
You gotta like learn how to triage what you're able to do, but that on top of having a disability just is like even harder and even more mentally debilitating.
Yeah, I definitely have just coming around this last year of talking about disability and in my work, and I went a long time trying to be like, I am not a disabled actor, I'm just an actor who also has that going on, but like claiming to be a disabled actor I think is something that's really important to me, the same as claiming to be a trans actor, and that is something that I can't control, but that's something that I can be proud of.
If you don't mind answering, did you go to UBC? I don't know if this happened during your program, but did you apply for UBC and did they know that you had a disability?
No, I didn't disclose it.
Okay.
I chose not to. I think I was definitely still like coming to terms with the fact that I had a disability.
For sure.
And when I auditioned for the BFA, I did my first year of university online during COVID, which was a trip. Anyways.
Are you a 2020 grad?
Yes, I'm a 2020 grad.
Me too.
Oh my God, love.
Yeah, terrible time.
Not ideal. Hopefully we'll have a university graduation at some point. Make up for that grad. Yeah, I had my fall in May of 2020, I think.
Okay.
So it's been a couple years now. I didn't even have like a cool accident. Like I fell on the stairs into a desk, which is like, you know, like I don't even have like I got hit by a car or something. Like not that that's cool, but like, you know, like a dramatic story. No, yeah. I just, I'm a klutz.
One of my exes had a really bad concussion because he fainted during choir and hit his head on a cello.
Oh my God. You know, fainting during choir, like I've seen such that happen so much. Yes. Like, people always faint during choir. I'm like, yo, dudes. Work on get that some breath water. Control. Yeah, or something. Yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah,
like it happens more than you would think. Someone for should real. Like create like a PSA about this. Anyways, Katarina,
yes,
would you like to tell us a little bit about your access needs?
Yeah, so I have a genetic bone condition called multiple epiphyseal dysplasia, and it basically affects all of the long bones in my body, and it's like pretty confirmed, but there's a very like significant series of genetic testing that has to be done, and doctors are like, don't do that if you want kids. And so, but yeah, that's basically what it is. And so from 13 to 17 I was relatively immobile. Like walking a block was hard. There was a period of time where I actually couldn't walk, and so when I was 17 I had both my hips replaced, and that experience really kind of open my eyes, you know, it changes you to have like
at so young
to see the world in a very different way. And I think with my own like unique positionality and, you know, being a girl with having a disability really also shaped the way I see like femininity and gender within theater and like the world around me. And so now I am like happily have regained a lot of my mobility. I'm very active and I'm very grateful to have the mobility that I do have. And so within musical theater, it's like I can't dance in heels, which if you're familiar with musical theater, most girls wear character shoes. And there's just like some dancing stuff that I obviously can't do. There's like jumps and stuff. Impact is hard, and long periods of time on my feet. And so MTT is super accommodating with that. And, you know, we kind of have a very strong EDI policy where, like, you know, you're mobility or accessibility needs won't obviously dictate a role. But yeah, I think that what's something that's super important to me within musical theater is like breaking down some of those like stereotypes around women, and even just like the shoes, for an example, and how that's so linked to kind of sexuality and desirability and like looking sexy. And so
yeah, it's a connection, you know, I never would have thought.
Yeah, it's like such right. little things. For
So many musical theater characters do wear heels when they dance.
Yeah.
And like, why is that the default?
And it's such like a strict thing on like Broadway and like higher up things. It's like, hey, you can't dance in heels, you're outie. And so that's becomes like a very, deep very, flaw. Yeah, very exclusive.
Very ableist.
Very ableist. And I'm like, yo. And so, you know, I kind of consider myself sort of the tip of the iceberg of disability. And even though I do manage like quite a bit of chronic pain, I know that I am one of the few people within MTT who has a physical disability. And so if I am just there, you know, what is it kind of speaks volume to like the integration of people with disabilities in the musical theater community, which, yeah.
Being that representation, yeah, and that
representation is so important, and
for the kid out there who wants to do it,
who wants to, and doesn't think they can.
You don't realize how important it is until you see it, and then you're like, oh my gosh, what changed?
Yeah,
how different it would have been for us had we seen someone like, and especially like I am present very able-bodied, which is a big thing.
Yeah,
that people might look at me and be like, oh, like why are you getting these adjustments because you look able-bodied? Like what's going on? And it's like also my condition is like very much like you can't prove it, if you get what I'm saying. Like it's muscular. I have to get injections every week, kind of get muscle injections into my neck, my head, my back. Fun, and it's not ideal. It's not fun, but it also allows me to move and have movement and do the things I want to do. And yet there is still a lot of pain that comes with that. And that has been a big thing to like learn how to function in pain. The way that a lot of the times there's nothing else you can do.
I mean, there's one thing about functioning in pain, and there's another thing about being a performer and an artist when you have chronic pain. Like, that's a whole other can of worms.
For real.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we are going to take a really quick ad break, but when we're back, we're going to talk a little more about how your access needs have affected your ability to perform and how the programs that you're involved in have kind of helped you or not helped you and what we can kind of do better about that.
Cool.
But awesome. Yeah. Sounds good.
Thanks.
Yo, this is the boy, Jacuzzi Lafleur. You hear what Kind Intrusions Radio, Jazz Cartier, y'all know who it is, Golden Child, baby, let's get it.
What up, this is Machine Gun Kelly, and right now I am tuned in to Crimes and Treasons, goddammit.
Hey, yo, this is Isaiah Rashad.
Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy Just Blaze.
Yo, 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 what's good, it's Bodega Bams, a.k.a. Poppy, a.k.a. Young Don Francisco.
Hey, yo, it's Baby No Money.
What's good, y'all, it's your boy Terrell Safady.
Hey, what's up, it's Tion Kidd.
What up, this is Stango.
And this is your boy Waldo.
And you're listening to Crimes and Treasons Radio.
Yeah, bitch.
What's up, this is Peanut Butter Wolf, you're listening to Crimes and Treason Radio.
Hello, this is Blow Fly.
Hey, this is Halo.
Hey, what's up, it's St. John, and you're not listening to Crimes and Treasons. It's lit.
Hey, y'all know who it is, man, it's your boy Saha the Prince.
Yo, what up, though? This is Ill Tone from Blacktivity.
Yo, peace, family. It's your Guala Dizzy Rice.
Yo, this is Remy Wolf.
Hey!
Yo, what's poppin', man? It's I Am Super.
It's J Worthy, a.k.a. P Worthy.
Hey, yo, you already know what time it is. It's your boy, ASAP Yams, a.k.a. Yamborghini, a.k.a. Lil Newport, a.k.a. motherfucking... I got too many motherfucking aliases, but you already know what time it is. Crime and treason in this motherfucker. Shout outs to these motherfuckers, they putting it down with that real trill shit.
Yo, 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 it's Cam Blow Out.
Crimes and treasons, that's what we believe in while we blowing the treason.
Crooks out.
Tune in to Vancouver's rap radio show every Tuesday, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM.
A person with HIV can now live a long, healthy life thanks to treatment. But the first step is to get tested. The sooner you know your HIV status, the better. You can now test yourself at home with just a prick of the finger and get results within a minute. Order a free HIV self-test kit online at selftest.catie.ca. That's selftest.catie.ca. Your health is at your fingertips. A message from CATIE, Canada's source for HIV and hepatitis C information.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM, and it is Access Day. And we're back here with Katarina and Miles.
Hello.
And hello, we just had a lovely little chat earlier about their access needs. So in case you missed it, Miles has a condition, whiplash. I actually only remember the acronym that I made in my head, WAD.
Yes.
And yours is MAD.
Yes.
I mean, whiplash associated disorder.
Yes. And yours is
multiple epiphyseal dysplasia.
Yeah. So.
Big words.
Big words. Big medical words.
We got a little bit into that. And Katarina is part of UBC Musical Theater. So that is like a club.
Yes.
That UBC does. But it's like a lot more commitment than a regular club.
Yeah. It's kind of like the space for people who really enjoy theater or musical theater and the arts that aren't really, I mean, players too, obviously, in the BFA program. So. All the homies.
All the homies.
All the homies.
And Miles is part of the BFA in acting.
Yes.
And also part of UBC Players. I actually don't really know what UBC Players is. Could you?
Oh, yeah. Share? I always love a PSA for UBC Players Club. Yeah. So it's a club on campus. And we do, each year we do a main stage, which is like our big show. And anyone, like you don't need any experience, come out, audition. There's lots of roles, whether it's tech, acting, directing, stage managing. There's so much fun stuff. And then in second semester, we do something called Festival Dionysia. And it's you do about 6 student-written plays. So like they're each 15 minutes. Again, you don't need any experience. Like fresh actors, fresh directors, fresh tech. It's really just an amazing place to get in, get experience. You can also like volunteer at the club. I'm an executive on the club, which has been an amazing opportunity. I run the promotions team. So if you see the Instagram, I'll be hanging out there. So yeah.
So it's more of like a traditional theater space.
Yes.
Whereas Katarina, it's like musical theater. Is Loose Assemblage part of yours?
Loose Assemblage isn't part of mine, okay. But it is a good couple friends who are working on that.
There's so many different like acting groups.
Yes.
There's like UBC Musical Theater, and then there's UBC Players, and then there's UBC Improv. And I'm like, where are all these places coming from, and how many stages does UBC have?
Yeah.
It is a really cool thing about UBC that if you're looking, it's out there, yeah. Which is very cool. Like when I moved out to UBC, I found Players Club going on Clubs Day, and I ran into my friend Finn and Maddie, who both work for the club, and they were like, auditions are due tomorrow. You can audition for the fall. And I was like, nah, I want to do this one. And so that led me to a lot of the friends I have now, plus amazing experiences that gave me the bravery and like the commitment to audition for the BFA,
yes.
Which was huge for me.
Yes. Slay. I love that confidence building. It really does.
Huge.
It is.
Huge.
Like the safe space in the arts is just so important for confidence building. And I swear by that, you know? Yeah.
So how have your access needs affected your ability to perform, practice, all those good things? Katarina, we'll start with you.
This is a really good question because I have really only had within my like university career positive experiences accommodating with my access needs. I'm also present my access needs in a very, I don't know, like in a way that's like, this is who I am and like we're gonna make this work, and for anyone who has like access needs. But yeah, like MTT has been super accommodating dance wise and super accommodating. Like if I need to sit down, like I have, you know, I'm part of that club and I always like make up for it when I can and stuff. Yeah. And then I think like my access needs would be treated a bit differently probably outside of MTT. I'm currently actually in Tuts right now, and which is theater.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Amazing. I'm in Tuts. I am.
What show are they doing this
They're
year?
Doing Matilda and the Prom.
Oh, so fun.
Yeah. So I'm in the Prom. You guys should come see it. We open July 6th.
I will
the end
be
of August. Yeah. And my access needs are also really accommodated there. We also have a lovely girl who's in a wheelchair, and like the equity, diversity, and inclusion in Tuts is awesome. And so yeah, they're always really accommodated. I yet to have an experience where like I'm not hired because of it, and also in like film, that's for me it's not as like an obstacle, but like definitely when I was younger, I was definitely not the same, I would say. I think the accommodation and the acceptability I think has come with time as like society grows, but also as like I grew into myself and accepting my own identity and stuff. Yes, I wonder how like Broadway, like I don't think, you yeah. know, like I'm like, yeah. well, my Broadway career happened,
I feel like Broadway,
you know,
a scandal about them not being
yeah.
really accessible.
Yeah.
It's really lovely to hear that UBC Musical Theater has been, and Tuts as well, has been so accommodating.
Yeah,
it sounds a lot more like you're not like asking them to accommodate you, you just tried out,
yeah,
and then you were like, by the way, this
yeah.
is my access need, and
yeah.
they were like, all right, sounds good,
yeah,
you're qualified, we'll make it work
for real. And in MTT, like I am the VP EDI, mm-hmm. so I am
awesome.
Pretty like diligent around accessibility in particular, because I feel like within MTT that is probably where we lack the most. And I think part of that is just like people don't know, it's still kind of that conception that it's not accessible for people with like, you know, the spectrum of accessibility needs.
Like you make it accessible.
Of course. Yes, yeah. absolutely. And so that's what we are working towards.
Yeah, we talk a lot here about the like different models of disability,
mm-hmm.
And how like a lot of disability is very much so a societal construct,
yes.
because it's just set up to
yes.
not support those
yes.
with disability.
Exactly.
Yes,
so true. But like the whole point is we do the work to make everything more accessible for everyone else. Like there's nothing a person with a disability really can't do unless you like try to accommodate them, you know?
Yeah, for real. No,
exactly.
It's 100% true.
And
yeah.
it's breaking down the old systems that don't want to accommodate because
yeah.
it's not easy,
yes.
in quotation marks.
Yes,
for sure.
Yeah.
Miles, would you like to tell us a little bit about how your access needs have affected your ability to practice, perform, etc.?
Yeah, definitely something that I kind of got thrown into when I had my accident. And then when I came back to acting because I was taking a break because of COVID, and I didn't realize how much it was going to affect my acting. I didn't realize how much it was going to affect my life, for sure. It definitely got worse as time went on, and like had to find ways to deal with it. Players Club has been really amazing. As I'm learning what my access needs are, like I'm still mm-hmm. discovering what those are, and how to advocate for myself is something that I've been kind of been a journey that I've been on recently. But Players Club has been amazing, and finding out like ways that if I can't make it to rehearsal, what can I do instead? Or if I need to do rehearsal from sitting in a chair in the corner because I'm unable to walk around or move, or like, you know, my limitations often are with movement, as my muscles in my neck and my back are often seized or in a lot of pain. So I don't have the range of motion that I used to. And if I do use that range of motion, it causes a lot of pain. With the BFA, the system with the BFA is very cutthroat. It's very
I believe it.
Yeah. It's very, very intensive training. And I think they're still very much learning how to, or we're encouraging them to learn how to treat people with disabilities and how to make space in theater for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's theater in itself inherently is a lot of like beat you down to build you back up.
Mm-hmm. And, yes, or beat you down, see if you can survive.
Yeah.
Then we'll build you back up.
And I think the BFA here has a lot of want to do better.
Yeah.
I think it's just following through on that want, because I believe that there is a lot of amazing people in the BFA, and you have to undo a lot of the institution that was built that isn't supporting disabled people to make a difference.
Yeah.
I guess, Miles, you have a bit of a unique experience here because you are in a program that does demand a lot of you physically.
Yeah.
Do your professors know about your access needs now?
Yes. I disclosed all of the stuff for myself. Like, I realize I can't do a lot of the things that those around me can. And they've been, yeah, my profs this year have been really accommodating. I had Olivia Schaefer, Moya O'Connell, and, oh my God.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
Leora Morrison. I don't remember her last name.
Hate to be them.
Yeah, I love Leora. If Leora's listening, I love you so much. She's probably not. But, and then Tanya. And they all were really, really good. Like, it was a lot of conversation and me figuring out what my needs were.
Mm.
And then there was also, like, again, I don't present physically disabled, so I think a lot of times it slips out of people's minds.
Yes.
And then I have to be like, oh, I can't do this. And then there is that awkwardness of saying,
oh, I so know.
I can't actually do that. And people be like, well, why can't you?
Yeah, it's why can't you?
Well, I'm, like, I have a disability. I have to consistently explain.
It's very emotionally taxing.
It is.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's the conversation a lot is that, like, I am doing the work to be a visibly disabled artist so people who come after me don't have to do the work that I'm doing.
That's so true. Yeah. And I think, like, there's such, like, there's just, like, things that having an invisible disability that people don't see what you go through because it's invisible. And, like, a lot of that, just like you said, Nicole, is, like, that emotional, like, taxing. And it's very interesting,
I
think.
It's a lot of labor.
It is.
It's really interesting, especially to have people kind of expect you to be this, like, disability advocate. I've heard this a lot from a lot of different people with disabilities, is that they feel the need whenever they, like, share. They're like, oh, I'm a person with a disability, and I do this. Like, I'm an actor. I'm a musician. I am XYZ. And a lot of people kind of expect them to just give emotional labor for free and, like, constantly retell their story, constantly explain the, like, models of disability that they face. And it's, like, it's tiring.
It is, yeah.
It's so tiring to have to constantly just educate everyone.
Justify your existence.
Yeah.
Do you in a lot of
like,
ways.
You face a lot of those, that constant, like, not or pressure from the outside as someone, or both people who present pretty openly as disabled artists to have to constantly be like, I have this disability and blah, blah, blah. This is what it is. This is how it affects. I mean, I'm doing it right now.
Yeah. No, for sure. And I think that's
a different context.
Yeah, very much different context.
Do you feel like people kind of expect that of you?
I think there is a lot of expectations. And I think it's also a lot of expectations in myself because I know that I am to be, you have the conversation of if you don't disclose that you're disabled and someone is being openly ableist around you, that's really awkward.
Yeah.
It's the same conversation as I'm a trans person who passes relatively well. And then, yeah, I'll have to be like, oh, also I'm this and now I have to explain my life and justifications. Yeah. And I've spent a lot of my life having to educate those around me with my queer identity, with my trans identity. I come from a very rural conservative town. And so I definitely am feeling a lot of fatigue these days. And I'm really thankful that I have a lot of support, like, especially, like, my parents back home are amazing. My mom is amazing. She is listening
right now.
She's listening right now. I love you so much, Mom.
Hi, Miles' mom.
Hi, Miles' mom.
She also has a disability. So having a conversation with her about chronic pain and having someone who understands it so deeply has been huge for me figuring this out.
Yeah.
In, like, at 20, all of a sudden having to figure this out that I wasn't thinking was going to be a thing in my life.
That's, like, such a strange age because it's not like you're young and you grow up with it and it evolves with you as you grow, and it's not like you're a little older and you have yourself kind of figured out. It's like you're in the middle of figuring yourself out as everyone in their early 20s is. I just made a playlist last night titled, "Is This What Your Early 20s Is Like?" And it's all just sad music.
That's
so real.
So real.
That's so real.
That plus a disability and, like, having to advocate for yourself constantly and then also figure yourself out is just like unimaginable. There's this podcast episode that Jamila Jamil was in, and she was in a pretty debilitating car accident when she was like 18.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, she was like bedridden for a year. And she was like, I left that and I'm perfectly able-bodied now. But it was a really interesting experience to be so young and to suddenly be debilitatingly disabled and have to like see that lens of the world during a time when you're supposed to be like out there figuring it out. Yeah. Like there's
carefree.
Carefree, not a worry.
Extra filter on top of it that you have to address.
Yeah, I think I've been, like, again, I've been very privileged with the people who around me to support me, and I have a lot of close friends here who also struggle with disabilities, and or you get what I'm saying. And to have that conversation with them and have a place where I can be openly honest about my disability and we can bitch. Sorry.
It's okay.
We can complain. And have those conversations and like the little like the niche things that you wouldn't be able to talk about. Like we were talking about a minute on the break about like the infantilization of disabled people.
For sure. Yeah.
And that's a huge thing, and it's like that is not what I'm wanting, looking for. So it's like the things that you don't think about otherwise, to have those conversations that people will understand is huge.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that like having a disability, having an invisible disability, like it's lonely at first. I know in my own experience, like I was very, very young. I started at like 12 and like I love my family forever, but they are all very able-bodied people. And, you know, it's like it's so frustrating sometimes where you're having this experience and it's like I think the thing with invisible disabilities is like no one sees it. So you kind of get like almost double alone, at least in like my own experience. And so I think, having like a safe space like MTT has been really awesome where it's like they accept and like want to work with the whole you and not like parts of you, I guess. And that makes sense. You have to like sell your soul to the devil to like get a role, you know, which is cool.
I guess that kind of really perfectly transitions into my next question. So there are obviously limitations that you both have. Like, Katarina, you can't dance in heels. Miles, I'm sure sometimes there are just days where you can't or you're in chronic pain and it's too difficult. But I don't think, though, that those things should necessarily be considered boundaries in your capabilities as actors and performers. Because I think that, like, even if you're just not a person with a disability, like, we're all going to have access needs at some point.
Yeah,
exactly.
All humans. Yeah. And how do you feel that kind of the world of performance needs to shift so that it's not, like, an expectation that you should be able to do all of these things? It's like, we take you as you are and work with it. Like, how do you think the world of performance needs to shift that perspective?
Oh, I have so many thoughts. Oh, I have so much to say, too. So many thoughts. I think the biggest thing of theater is that you work your butt off and it doesn't everything the show the art comes first. Like screw your family, screw your friends, screw your life outside of it,
screw your dog that just died.
Like they don't care.
You become robotic a little bit.
They
know?
Tell like I have had teachers tell stories like, oh yeah, like my grandfather died and I just had to go do the show, and I'm like, okay, but we like why do we have to do that? Like why can't there be understudies? Like I think that's one of the things that think about, like those are there for those emergencies. And of course a lot of companies and stuff don't want to pay, which is a big thing. It's costs money to get access needs a lot of the time, and it's easier for them to just turn a blind eye and say not my business, it's not me. So and then that leads to the disabled people having to activate whatever the word is, push themselves to get the access needs they need instead of an institution helping them.
Yeah,
it is very much so the onus of the individual that is sometimes being exploited by these institutions to kind of advocate for themselves. And I mean, like, I've thought so much about the theory of this. I lie in bed and I think about it. I lie in bed and think about weird things. I, like, text a bunch of my friends at, like, 2 in the morning.
So true.
That's like, so real.
Do you think that, in theory, rehabilitation and justice can, like, coexist? And they're like, go to bed.
It's like, it's 3 a.m.
2 a.m.
But I think about that a lot, is how a lot of institutions are the responsibility should be on them to shift how they treat people with accessibility needs and how they support everyone and make it seamless. And it sounds like there are some institutions that have started doing a really great job of that, like MTT, UBC MTT, but like there are so many where I'm like, like, this is not, this should not be on me, you know? Like, exactly. This is your job to make my life easier. And that kind of leads into another question for you, Miles. When you told your professors that you had some access needs, were they immediately like, okay, well, what do you need from me? Or were they like, all right, let's sit down and make a plan? Like, what was that experience like?
I think I definitely disclosed at the beginning of my training, and I said, hey, like, just like letting you know I have these needs. And I was still at the time figuring out what my needs were, mm-hmm. specifically because I went into training that was like physically intensive, like 9 to 12 every day of the week, or not Saturday and Sunday, but you get what I'm saying. And so sitting down, like, I didn't know what the training was going to look like. So lots of it was the conversation of, okay, like, how can we adjust? And probably one of the people that was most in my corner was my movement teacher, Olivia Schaefer. She was really great about being like, okay, like, if you can't do this sit out, it's fine. This is not like going to affect your grade. Don't hurt yourself for it.
Yeah.
And she was really big on that. And so was my movement teacher. Like, all of my teachers were actually very, very great. Where the institution might be failing me in a lot of ways,
yeah.
it's the individual people that make it worth doing.
Goddamn bureaucracy.
Yeah, no, I like to make the joke about like the omnipotent UBC that gets in the way of everything.
But who are they?
Here's the thing, I don't know. I keep
like
having
the Oz.
I keep running into wizard. This and like, we can't do it because UBC says, but like, who is UBC?
For can real? We like, I've never seen
who
them
is
before?
UBC?
So
who is
don't know UBC? Don't know her. I don't know. So yeah, it's
is she
like,
real? It's like UBC. Oh, has anyone ever actually been there?
No, it's,
oh
my god, it's not real.
Is it a real place?
Plot twist. Conspiracy theory. UBC. Oh, not real.
They'll just actually come here. That's how UBC is actually fitting so many students onto a campus that's so small.
Literally.
We're going to take another break super quickly, but when we're back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this topic, because I really like this conversation
yeah,
that
for
we
sure.
have about institutions and how they need to be a little bit more accessible.
So true.
We'll be right back.
May is Asian Heritage Month in Canada, and this year, the Vancouver Asian Heritage Month Society and its signature event, the Exploration Festival, is celebrating its 27th anniversary. Exploration Festival is a month-long celebration that brings together all of the Pan-Asian Canadian artists throughout the Lower Mainland, including visual, art, poetry, dance, and music. Find all of the events and exhibitions in the online program guide, which you can download at exploration.org to learn more about what's happening in your community this Asian Heritage Month.
Are you tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. And we are back with Katarina and Miles.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about this conversation around institutionalization. So, or not institutionalization, that's definitely not the right word. I'm so sorry.
The institution.
The
as
institution.
A whole. Bureaucracy.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were talking a little bit about how it's like you know, when you're a person with a disability or access needs and you need help, it's oftentimes not the professors or the teachers mm-mm. that are like, go F yourself.
Yeah.
It's this invisible bureaucracy.
Yes.
Who
yes.
are they?
Who
Where
are they
coming from?
I think about that all the time. I've had a lot of conversations about recently about the funding of the BFA, and UBC doesn't give the BFA money.
Oh.
Which I think is so weird because we give UBC our tuition.
Yeah, yeah. Where does it go?
And they don't put the money back into the program other than like the profs, which is not – so we go on ticket sales, which does not leave us with the
That's
amount
really
of money
interesting.
That most institutions do.
Damn.
Yeah, so it gives us – so then there's a lot of conversations I think that run into money. In the BFA.
Yeah, I think money in general, I think like MTT is like I said, I've had such a positive, safe experience there. And like profit isn't
the focus.
Of course, it's not the focus. And it's also not like do or die. And I think when you work in those institutions where it is do or die, where money is the main objective, is when you kind of get those like compromised morality
for
like disabled people or anyone who has like any sort of marginalized identity.
Compromising the body for
compromising the body for the cost. Not cool beans. Super not cool beans. Let me just say that. And I think like as far as changing like the musical theater institution, what it needs to do forward, I think like we live in such an ever pressing time of where like media shapes how you think about the world around you, how you think about disabled people. And it's like that continuing integration of disabled people. And like only speaking from my own experience as like a cis woman with a disability, and I kind of touched on this earlier and we were touching this over the break, and kind of what that means for femininity. And like, you know, I often have played roles that is like the typically attractive woman and stuff. And within those roles, sometimes I often feel this invisible pressure of like, okay, like, do I now need to almost like, I feel the need to hide when I walk around with a limp or the amount of chronic pain or like if I can't do this or that. And that's not cool. And I think because that pressure, and I know I'm not the only one who's like feeling that, where I need to like to be the desirable, sexy character, I have to, you know, hide my disability.
And
like
people with disabilities can be more than just people with disabilities.
Exactly. And I think that things. As like an overarching like kind of conception that like people with disabilities are this is like this desexualization, that's like definitely something that needs to kind of change, you know. They can definitely coexist.
It goes hand in hand with like the infantilization,
it
right?
Absolutely, like, does, yeah.
And it puts these disabled people in such a weird position. Like, hot take, a disabled person is still a person.
Yeah, for real.
Like,
yeah.
It's not like all of a sudden you get this shell of a, like, it's this completely different person. So how to have a conversation about sexuality and being disabled is huge. Like, how can you, those two are so hand in hand.
Yeah.
But the conversation isn't out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's never, like, in the media. Like, honestly, like, I get to see a TV show where that they talk about sexual identity and having a disability. Like, that character literally doesn't exist.
It's not
and I'm
out
like,
there.
Damn, that's so not cool beans.
I'm sorry, I just cut you
oh,
off.
Oh, no, please.
The only time I've seen a character with a disability on mainstream television kind of explore their sexuality was that one character on Sex Education.
Oh, I have not
in
seen
a
that
wheelchair.
Show.
Great show. You should watch. It's on Netflix. But there was a character in a wheelchair who got a sex scene.
Yes!
Yeah. And
okay,
I was like,
yes.
Thinking, I was like, I've literally never seen this before.
Exactly. Mm.
Why not?
Yeah,
yeah.
Totally.
I think it's like a very, I mean, within performance there are, and within really every kind of realm of living as a person, whatever activity you do, there isn't a whole lot of accessibility recognition or recognition for people with disabilities as people, and that's just speaking to a larger culture thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Like, as you were saying, Katarina, in musical theater, like, there's this weird pressure for, I guess, like, cis women, I'm sure anybody else, like, perform as this, like, hyper-masculine, hyper-feminine character, and that's, like, can I be that as someone with a disability? That's not exclusive to musical theater or acting.
No.
That is a very societal thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Very societal thing. And I think it's cool how society's like beliefs and values really do kind of infiltrate in the arts, and you see that like reflection, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not even just how would culture affect the culture around disability affect musical theater and performance. It's like, how do we start the conversation here, and how does that penetrate the rest of society?
Yes. Yeah, that's like
it
so my focus in my degree, you know.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very much so like a this specific niche and society need to permeate each other
for real.
Exactly. Disability justice.
Yeah.
One of the books I read really recently was Visibility Disability. It was a collection of essays about disabled artists and disabled people. And one of the quotes that really stuck out for me was, I've become the disabled artist I never wanted to be.
Yeah. I just want to be an artist.
And
that's so true.
And but the thing,
you know?
I, like, when I took that, I was like, both that, and it was also like, a year ago, I would have been like, I don't want to be a disabled artist. But now I'm like, I'm happy to be a disabled artist. Like,
that's awesome.
I got to come full circle of being like, if you asked me like 3 years ago, I would have been like, that's not obviously something that I want to do.
Yeah.
But it's also a privilege that I get to be an actor and be in, like, again, representation is so important. Mm-hmm. I will yell about that till the dogs come home. Like, the idea that kids cannot be what they cannot see is one of my favorite quotes.
Oh, I so agree with
that. That is a great one.
I love that you're so, like, proud of it, Miles. Like, that's so, like, it makes me as a person also with a disability, like, feel, like, seen and heard. Because I honestly, like, I will admit, like, I know the people around me, like my friends and my family, know how outspoken I am about social justice topics. But like inside, I do still grapple with them, like, you know, just having a disability and also being an artist. Sure. Like, it's hard, you know. I get kind of insecure about it, which is, like, you know, my own undoing and unlearning that needs to be done. But yeah, hopefully, like, one day there'll be like kids who don't have to do that undoing and unlearning, you know?
That's exactly my thoughts. Like, I'm definitely on a journey of unlearning the inherent ableism that has been ingrained in me.
For real.
By society. And I'm having this conversation with my job right now, and someone had said that sitting was unprofessional.
Oh, love that.
And
I've gotten that too.
I was like, okay. So,
you know what is unprofessional? Suffering.
You know what is unprofessional? Ableism.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so if you see someone in a wheelchair, are they inherently unprofessional for
That's
you?
That's so, oh my God.
And it's like these things that people say that they do not realize is a big thing that I keep running into. And like, I'm definitely on a journey myself of like accepting my disability and like learning how to function with it and learning to not be ashamed of it, which is something that I'm still doing. And if I can be vocal of that journey, I hope that makes other people who are on that journey a little bit easier.
Yeah. What a slay.
What a slay. What is so true, bestie.
Yeah, that's a slay.
My friends should be really proud that I have not said slay very much in this thing so far. I say it way too much.
My boyfriend hates when I say slay.
I say retweet too much.
Retweet?
Love, wait, I'm picking that up.
Also, like, rats.
Retweet.
Rat. Oh. Just
rats.
Yeah, that's...
Rats. That's rats. A good one.
That's kind of millennial.
That's, I
don't
like that.
Sorry, what are you, 21?
I think it's a boomer thing.
Rats is for sure like a boomer thing.
Yeah, it's like and I'm okay with that.
I have a list of quotes that my dad says all the time, and they're just like the most like old person quotes. No shade, he's not old, but like
no shade.
They're
no
very
shade.
Dad quotes.
Very dad quotes.
All right, I think kind of just to wrap up today's session, I'd like to ask. I know time flies, right?
Time so flies
when you're having fun.
I know. When you're having fun, that's another that's a dad joke hey, right there, yeah.
I'm on it.
What are some words you'd like to give any person who would like to join performance in any capacity who has a disability, whether it be invisible, physical, non-physical, etc.?
I think speak up for yourself if you can and know that there are places in the arts that are safe for you. I know a lot of my friends right now, including Loose Assemblage, including Brilliance Vending Machine Company, who have shows coming out in the summer, are working tirelessly on how to make safe theater.
Yeah.
And it's out there.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It might be hard to find, but I promise you, if you're looking, you can find it. And that includes On Campus, Players Club, that includes MTT. Like, it is there for you. Mm-hmm. And reach out to those around you.
Yeah. I would kind of say, like, like, I kind of thought of this question as, like, what I could say to my younger self. And it's, like, you are so worthy of being up on that stage or being in front of that camera. And you are not, any less talented or any less deserving if you have access needs or a disability. And, like, you know, you will find the people and the space and the community that values you for you. And, like, it's a crappy world sometimes out there. And it sucks. And also, like, keep pushing because you deserve to be up there and like you need to be up there. Like there's a call for action, man. Like integrate the disabled people, period.
Now's the time.
Now's the time.
Now is it's 2023.
It's 2023. Like we need to get over some
Bill C-22. I don't know if either of you know what that is.
Hmm?
But that is
Yes.
I mean, who knows what's going on with that bill? It's held up somewhere with this invisible bureaucracy, whoever they are.
So true.
But yeah, like if there's ever a time to really start advocating for those with disability rights or for disabilities and access needs, like it's now. Like things are moving at a really rapid pace, whether it's in sports, performance, just general politics, like the culture is changing really quickly and like anyone can be a part of this discussion, able-bodied or not, like who are able-bodied or don't have
speak
disabilities.
Up
that's what the like, that's what I'd also say is like integrating disabled people and kind of erasing that stigma isn't just the job of people with disabilities, it is equally a job of people with abilities. It's a collective effort, you know.
Yeah.
And
it's, It's so hard to stand up for yourself when you're in that state because you're constantly doing it.
Yeah.
You get that burnout. You have to. It's not a choice you can make. If you have a friend around you who is able-bodied and can stand up for you, that matters so much.
And also, like, just people with ability that is, like, normal. Well, not normal. That's not quite the right word. But typical, I guess. Just educating yourself and learning on, you know, the social constructions around disability so that you and yourself can change your narrative around it. And that inherently will change, like, the culture you're a part of and the film you're a part of or the theater you're a part of or whatever, the art, you know?
Snaps.
Retweet.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much, Katarina and Miles, for coming
on. Thank you for having us.
Awesome. It was a delight.
Very, very cool.
And yeah, we have another episode of All Access Pass airing tonight at 6 p.m. with some UBC music people that are coming on. And I hope you all tune in and have a great rest of Access Day.